You're listening to More Perfect Marketing, the show for business owners and entrepreneurs always on the lookout for smart marketing ideas to keep their business moving forward. And now, here's your host, David Baer.
Well, hello and welcome to another episode of More Perfect Marketing. It's David Baer here, and today we're going to be diving into storytelling. In my weekly emails, I try very, very much to share stories in order to dimensionalize the points that I'm making, the lessons that I'm teaching. And I remember one story that I got a bunch of replies to when I sent this email out. And it was about how I used to, when I was an elementary school kid, I would walk back from school and then walk up the driveway of the house that was located just behind mine and hop over the fence and into my backyard. And I was talking about how I became sort of friendly with the owner of the house as I was walking up the driveway. I would see her working in her kitchen sometimes, and I'd wave and she'd wave back. And it was a pleasantry, although I don't know that we ever actually exchanged words. She understood that I was using her property as a shortcut. And so I tell this story from a different angle, making the point ultimately that shortcuts are not necessarily a bad thing, and shortcuts are often welcomed by those who are in it or around you. And then I went on to talk about how shortcuts can be used in business, or in the case of, I think, that particular email, I was talking about use of email formulas and templates. Well, we're going to talk a little bit about templates in a moment, but what I really wanted to make a point of was the use of stories in getting an idea across and getting it fixated in the listener's mind so that they can return to that lesson, that point, again and again, because that story is so heavily embedded in their mind. I'm not an expert in this, but thankfully, I have somebody here who is, and he's going to help us unpack this and get into a couple of corners of this subject that I was not expecting until we just hopped on the call and had a little pre-show discussion and discovered some really interesting things about each other. So welcome to Douglas Hatcher, who is joining us today from my hometown of Scarsdale, New York.
Yes. Thank you so much, David, for having me. We're gonna have a good time, a lot of fun. And yes, your hometown says hello.
Well, thank you. You're actually the second person who I've interviewed on the show who happens to live in the town that I left years ago for the West Coast. But it's so nice to catch up, and it was great to have our pre-show conversation discussing a whole bunch of things that we had in common. So we'll probably visit some of those things. But I want to talk a little bit about what you currently do with your current business by way of how you got here, because one of the things you said was, yes, we moved to Scarsdale after about 10 years ago after living in Washington, D.C. And then you told me what you did in D.C. and I started to connect the dots. Why don't you connect the dots for us?
Awesome. That sounds great. So a great way to start is with the title of your podcast, More Perfect Marketing. And as you note in your on the page for your podcast, you talk about the preamble to the Constitution and the inspiration for More Perfect. Instead of More Perfect Union, you've got More Perfect Marketing. And so when I saw that, I didn't know that we were going to talk about DC, but as someone who spent 20, 25 years in Washington, I got to say I love that.
Thank you. Not too many people actually know what I'm referencing. So thank you for actually noting
yes,
that.
Yes, absolutely. So I was in DC for a long time. Half of the time I was on Capitol Hill and I was doing legislative work in the House. And then I was doing speech writing in the Senate. I worked for Olympia Snowe, Senator Olympia Snowe from Maine. Mm-hmm. I was with her for about 6 years. And so I was sort of a creature of Washington for a long time. I will also say, I probably shouldn't say this, but I will say it. One of my first speechwriting jobs was at the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which funds PBS and NPR. Mm-hmm. And the person who was the president at the time was former ambassador to the Seychelles under Ronald Reagan. His name was Richard Carlson. Richard Carlson was a really wonderful writer in his own right.
Yeah.
He and I had great simpatico. I met him only twice. I did not have to see him or talk to him. We just really hit it off on the page. I did tons of speeches for him. He is the father of Tucker Carlson.
Ah, okay.
I will simply leave it at that. But who knew? I sort of, you know, I didn't know Tucker at the time, but I think he was probably in his 20s. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But he went on to other things.
We've discovered a lot of small world things in our conversations so far today. And it's not surprising, given, you know, the nature of Washington, D.C. being a company town, that there's those connections that you mentioned. But let's share one other connection, because you were going to tell me a story. And I said, save it for our recorded conversation. And that's a name that we'll mention in a moment, who is not really in the politics space, but he has created a lot, and has he's an artist who has written characters in the political space, and that's a guy named Aaron Sorkin, and he happens to also have grown up in the town in which you're currently residing, and I used to, just a couple of doors down from me. And you were about to tell me about one of his very first big commercial works. And
yes,
we're gonna probably connect this somehow through a story to a lesson at some point. But for folks who don't know who he is, you should. He's written a lot of major films that you've likely seen, as well as TV shows, most notably a show called The West Wing. And before that, he had a big hit with a film, which was before it was a film, with starring Jack Nicholson. It was a stage play, and that's a play called A Few Good Men.
Yes. And I want to hear about the stage reading that you got to be at least witness to, or you got to see right before, I guess, it went to Broadway. But so Aaron Sorkin was a bartender at, he was at a theater. I'm going to say it was the Winter Garden. I don't know which theater it was. It was something like that. Mm-hmm. And he was a bartender there. And during the intermissions, that's when he was really, really busy, right? He was doing drinks. But the rest of the time, he was able to work on ideas for plays.
Yeah.
And so he would write his notes on cocktail napkins. And the notes were for a play that would become A Few Good Men. And so he would write down stuff on cocktail napkins in between, you know, intermissions. And then he would go home and type it up. Next day, go back to work, write stuff on cocktail napkins, go home, type it up. That's how he did A Few Good Men. And then it ended up going to Broadway. And some other guy was a bartender and doing something. Who knows?
Yeah. And there's a lot of great stories about lots of different crafts that started from, well, a back of a napkin is a classic story, right? It's like inventing something in your garage and having that lore behind something, is, you know, getting back to our storytelling, is often an effective device in sort of conjuring up, you know, the origins of where something, you know, started out, and maybe can be helpful in representing, you know, why an audience member might connect with it, or a future customer might connect with it. So you see what I did there? I circled back to our main point, which is stories and marketing.
Yep. Well, you know, the thing about storytelling, it's so fascinating. I have to confess, as a speechwriter for a long time, I didn't think in terms of stories. I thought in terms of arguments. I thought in terms of trying to make a point. And largely from the standpoint of the person I'm writing for, not even really thinking probably as much as I should have about the audience. I was thinking about the senator and what were the points the senator wanted to make. And that makes a lot of sense. But once you get into the storytelling mindset, you realize that it's really about the audience, in that if you want to transfer knowledge or an idea, or if you want someone to buy something, the fastest way to do it isn't through your argument. It's not through the logic. It's through emotion. And one of the things I tell people is we feel faster than we think.
Yes.
And we forget that. You know, the phrase everyone uses is people buy on emotion and justify on logic. That's true. But even more simply put, we feel faster than we think. So if I want you to do something and I want to get to yes faster, the story is probably your best route.
So I wonder if you can speak more to that in terms of the realization that you had as you were, you know, writing speeches. Did that change the nature of what you were writing? And if so, how did it change the impact that speeches had?
Excellent question. And the fact is, I only started doing speech writing because an executive came to me and said, my PowerPoints suck. They have lots of data points and no story. Can you help? Can you help with business storytelling? And that was toward the end of my tenure at this company. And I had no idea what he was talking about, truly. I knew that story was something, you know, in the abstract. And so I literally sat at my computer and I Googled the two words business storytelling. And out came people like Steve Jobs, Richard Branson, Nancy Duarte, a bunch of different people, some of whom I had heard, some of whom I had not heard of. And I began to dig deeper. To answer your question, I actually never used storytelling per se in a speech, because at that time, I was really working on PowerPoints with executives, not so much on the speech writing front. I got into it. I helped with the PowerPoint. And I was so inspired, I developed a 2-hour course for the company that I ended up doing globally for the next 18 months. And it was so popular, there was a waiting list to get into the course.
Okay. And what was the course?
It was a business storytelling course. The premise was the art and science of making things matter and moving people to act. That was the whole point of business storytelling, the art and science of making things matter and moving people to act.
I love those two elements in particular, because they're often the things that are missed in a lot of marketing that I see out there that is, you know, is immediately, you know, I can identify something. Well, that's set up to fail because it's not clear who it's for. It's not clear why it exists. And as a result, it's not going to get, and it likely isn't leading anywhere or pointing somebody in the, okay, here's the next step now that you understand these two pieces. So the fact that you're focusing in those two areas with that course makes so much sense.
Well, and it was one of those things that revelation sort of came on upon revelation. As I started working on the course, I was learning as I was going, and then from that learning, I had stuff to teach people. But I learned three things that stood out for me, and they all start with the letter A. And so I called it the 3A framework: audience, attention, and action. You really have to have all three to be successful in business storytelling.
Okay.
And for audience, the hard thing about that is you have to have enough humility to realize it's not about you. It's about your audience. And as I tell people, you have to give your customer the cape. It's not your cape. You got to give them the cape. You're not Superman. Your customer is. Attention. People love to talk about how attention spans are dwindling. We can argue about whether that's true or not. But what we can't argue about is that attention spans may or may not be dwindling. But what we know for sure is that customer expectations are increasing. When it comes to content, the world is very different today than it was 30 years ago. And we can talk more about that. But I can tell you, and you'll in your work, you know this to be true. Customers expect more from your content.
Yes.
And when it comes to the third A, action, to repeat the thing that I just said earlier, you know, people don't decide based on the logic of your argument. They decide on emotion. So these are three things that people don't really think about that much. The importance of your audience, more important than you are. It's not about the fact that attention spans are dwindling, consumer expectations are increasing, and people don't make decisions on logic. They make decisions on emotion.
So I want to fill in the rest of your story, because it doesn't end with the course. And you've been doing work around storytelling and structure and helping businesses communicate through stories since that course. Why don't you kind of catch us up to where you are now, and then we'll dive a little bit deeper into some of the other things that we have planned for our listeners.
Excellent. Perfect. So I left the company in 2017. I had an opportunity to sort of start my own thing. And I did that with my wife. And the company is called Communicate, the number 4, Impact. And Communicate for Impact is just, you know, it's another way of saying storytelling. Mm-hmm. That's sort of the centerpiece of what we do. We've recently added speech writing. I don't really have to get into that, but it's basically, how can you communicate in order to move someone to do something? Because that's ultimately what you want to do.
Yeah.
So we started that 6 years ago, 2017. We've worked with solopreneurs, we've worked with startups, small, medium-sized companies, global multinationals, sort of across the board. But the common thread is the importance of making what you want to sell matter to the person you want to sell it to in a way that gets them to actually buy it. That's the overarching premise of the business.
And I've heard many people who come from the storytelling space, or even the sales storytelling space, that we are in the position of using stories in so many places beyond just business, obviously. And so I'm curious, do you venture into that, the world of the personal storytelling and the making storytelling a habit, or is it really structured around the sort of the outcome-based business stuff?
It's more structured around the outcome business stuff. However, part of our pitch to people is, it's almost, we sort of, not self-denigrating, but we're humble enough to say, what we're doing here is really not that amazing, okay? All we're really doing is helping you take what you do naturally, which is tell stories, and apply it to what you do professionally.
Yeah.
Somehow what happens is, you know, all of a sudden you've got to do a presentation before the board, and all of a sudden your humanity just leaves the room. And what we try to help people with is, let's bring the humanity back in the room. Mm-hmm. Let's have a conversation with people that's really not unlike the conversation you would have with a friend at a barbecue. And let's do it in a business context.
So as you were talking about that, I was thinking, you know, what it's not necessarily that earth-shattering. It's not you know, innovative in that respect, except that it's something that many businesses don't do. And I was thinking about, we were talking before we hit record about Robert Collier, and I was thinking about another well-known early 20th century marketer and copywriter, a guy named Claude Hopkins, who used to work with businesses and identify things that were happening inside those businesses that were so mundane and boring to them that they would think, well, that's not special. Why would we ever talk about that? So this is a roundabout way of getting to the question of how does one identify stories and understand what's going to be impactful and what might not be?
That's a great question. I have to answer it first by talking about Claude Hopkins.
Sure.
Because the story you're talking about is the Schlitz story. So Claude Hopkins had the Schlitz beer account. This is in the early part of the 20th century. And Schlitz was like number 5 in the marketplace. And his job was to basically move them up the ladder. And what he did, and this is part of the humility that you need to put your audience first. What he did was he went to the brewery and he talked to people. Like people forget to do that in business today. Like go and talk to your customers. And I think on your last podcast, you and the person on that podcast said the same thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, the best market research is getting on the phone and talking to somebody or talking to them face to face if you can. So Claude Hopkins goes to the Schlitz Brewery, and every other beer company, including Schlitz, was talking about purity. Every beer is pure. It's pure this, pure that. But nobody asked what makes it pure. Mm-hmm. That's all he did, was he was curious. And they told him, well, it's this, this, and this, and this. And we go into the ground and we do this. And he started taking notes, and he just parroted back all the things that made the beer pure, put that into his ad copy, and Schlitz beer went from 5 to 1. And
yeah.
So that's part of that's the curse of knowledge, where we forget that just because we know stuff, we assume everybody else knows it too. And with storytelling, again, you have to turn the camera from yourself to your audience if you want to have impact. And when you do that, you remember, oh my, I know that, but they might not know that. Mm-hmm. And you begin to flip the script. And once you do that, you have a much better chance of reaching your audience.
So the question that I was leading to was about how do you identify those stories? And I'm assuming at least I guess I guided you here. So would the things that are obvious to you but not obvious to them be a good starting point, or are there other places that you think are a good place to identify good stories?
So I honestly think the first thing you've got to do is and be curious. In other words, let's put it in the context of a company. Let's say you're doing a blog post on a widget, right? How would you find the story that's going to help with the widget? Well, go talk to the people who make the widget. Like, don't start with the premise that you know what the widget does. Start with the premise that maybe someone else knows it better, and mm-hmm. go talk to that person, and then get that person to refer you to somebody else who works on another part of the widget. Dave Ogilvie, the great ad man, David Ogilvie.
I was this as soon as you were going down that path, I was thinking of the Rolls-Royce ad.
Rolls-Royce ad. So David Ogilvie didn't know squat about Rolls-Royce. He had the account. He spent 2 weeks researching it. Look, David, the main thing is to be curious, mm-hmm. and to be humble, and to realize you don't know everything. And so Ogilvie researches Rolls-Royce. He comes out with an iconic ad, but look, David Ogilvie basically just did his homework.
And the premise of that ad, just to underscore the point that you're making, was that the headline came from him talking with an engineer who was describing, I can't remember exactly what it was,
the clock.
The clock being the loudest thing that you hear because the motor was so quiet. Yeah.
And Ogilvie to your point, he did not create that headline. It came from the guy he was talking to. Mm-hmm. Again, if your ego gets in the way, you've got a you're going to miss an opportunity. So I would be curious, be humble, and be open to what you see around you because you're curious.
I want to switch up the subject a little bit because we've been talking a little bit about the ways that you identify stories. There are a lot of businesses out there which don't use storytelling or think that they're using storytelling effectively, but they're not using it as effectively as they might have the ability to.
Sure.
And so, you know, as we are getting into this wonderful and scary world of artificial intelligence and the ability to diagnose and act on things a lot faster than we used to in the past, you've been working on a project to help businesses on this front. And leveraging some of the technologies that are out there. And so I'd love to learn a little bit more about the project that you're working on because it sounds pretty fascinating.
That is awesome. Thank you so much. Yeah. So, you know, ChatGPT, OpenAI launched it last November, November 22nd. And that's a date that I'm always going to remember. And I think around December, I started playing with stuff and thinking, what if I could put storytelling into a prompt in some way, shape, or form where it could help someone get to where I am now, but faster? And what, so what I there's some proven frameworks that we use in our storytelling training, and I put them into a prompt using ChatGPT, and I developed something called story quotient. Mm-hmm. And all it does is it tells you whether or not a piece of content up to 2,000 words is optimized for customer engagement. And it does it by looking at five factors. And guess what? I didn't create the five factors. ChatGPT did. So in the process of sort of ideating and iterating all this stuff, it came back with these five factors. Mm-hmm. And so then you kind of have to build a relationship with this tool.
Yes.
And you have to, in my case, I want the previous queries to continue. Like, I don't want to say stop. I want to keep the conversation going. So everything I put in is built into the next thing. And so the five factors were narrative structure, customer focus, emotional resonance, benefits versus features, and use of language.
Okay.
So we've got this prompt now. It's an AI-powered prompt. I still have to direct it, but mm-hmm. I can take a piece of text from like 500 to 2,000 words. I can plug it into the prompt, and it will tell me out of 10 whether or not this piece of content is optimized for customer engagement. So most people get like a 6 or a 7, but that number is based on the five factors. Each yep. factor is rated out of 10. So it's the average of the five. It doesn't always get it right. I can eyeball a piece of text and I can tell you, we can talk more about it. I can tell you if this thing is optimized at all.
Yeah.
But so I have to push it and say, well, you didn't think about this. What if you did this? To get to a place where like, oh yeah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. So it's a combination of AI with human sort of coming together to create a powerful tool.
So, you know, we talk a lot about, and I have been working with my clients who are marketing agency owners since before ChatGPT came out, when we were working with Jasper and some other tools, yep. on how to leverage these tools to address existing problems. And I imagine that this was something that you were already doing, looking at copy, looking at text, and trying to identify whether it was these five criteria or not. You had your criteria, and so, you know, we say on a regular basis that AI helps us do things better, faster, and cheaper. And I'm assuming that that's part of the utility of this the scorecard that you are offering as part of this this review of copy. Tell me a little bit about what you were doing before, and how this has sped up or made it more convenient. Is this process something that you're offering to prospective clients to sort of start the relationship by, you know, talking to them sort of as a lead magnet or as a tripwire offer is another phrase that we often yep. use. What is the role that it plays in your business?
So it does both. It's a lead magnet for strategic partners. They can offer it as a lead magnet. If you're not a strategic partner, we will sell it for a pretty cheap price mm-hmm. in order to get you into our funnel, either way. But to your point as to what we did before and how that informed what we're doing now, you know, on a hero page at the top of a website, if it says we're the leading X in the industry of X, mm-hmm. I already know that's a problem because I don't care. I look for all the we's in the copy and I turn them to use. You know this trick. I look for us's and I turn them to whatever the opposite of us is for you. Mm-hmm. That's just a really easy fix. And that's actually fed into the tool.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. I mean, because it changes everything once mm-hmm. you put in you for we. If you kind of have a glorified listicle where all you're doing is saying our product does this, it does this, it does this, there's nothing happening, that There's no narrative. Mm-hmm. So all you got to do is throw in a but here and there, and then you have something happening. Again, that's factored into the tool. You can do this yourself. I just told you how to do it.
Yeah.
Most people don't want to take the time, and they don't have the time. So we have a tool that does it for them. Benefits and features. I mean, again, if you're just given the features with no, I call it not only the benefit, but the benefit of the benefit,
uh-huh.
meaning, you know, I'm able to do something. It helps me do X so that I can do Y, so that I can sleep, you know, sleep better at night.
Yeah.
That's the ultimate benefit. It factors that in as well.
I love that piece because that's the stuff that we were talking about earlier is where the emotion is, right? The secondary or tertiary benefits are the things that are actually the things that we as humans are most aware of.
Yep.
And connecting it back to, you know, the feature is the job of well-structured copy.
Yep. And so the tool, story quotient, it's not breaking any new ground. It's doing stuff we already know how to do. And again, I just told your listeners how to do it. It just does it faster.
Mm-hmm.
And it does it for you.
Who is it for?
You know, it's funny you mentioned marketing agencies, people you work with. That's who we're targeting right now. In other words, mm-hmm. if you've got a client who's got a crappy web page, homepage, and you're like, dude, that's not so great. And they're like, they trust your opinion. But then on top of that great opinion, you might have this third party validation that says, oh, yeah, your page has got a 6 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
Your content is really not optimized. That's our initial target. People who have agencies who could use a little more ammo for their clients.
I love the fact that you're working. So you said strategic partners earlier, and, yep. and that I think is a classic strategic partnership to be able to connect with somebody who is already providing a service and has the trust and respect of their clients, hopefully.
Yep.
And so that makes a ton of sense and good for you for thinking about building a business on the back of an existing relationship. In the marketing agency world, you know, it's been a classic approach to identify what's happening in a business or what's not happening in a business and offering a fix. And so, you know, years ago, I remember when, you know, websites were first sold and they were pretty terrible. And then the agency would come along and try to offer a better version of the website. What would you do? You would say, I've looked at your website and I've analyzed it and here are some improvements. Would you like to have a meeting? Same thing with, you know, people who are email copywriters. The classic way to sell email copywriting is to join somebody's list, read a bunch of their emails, then maybe write them and say, hey, I've noticed this is what's happening. There's a couple of things I might point out. Would it be okay if I wrote you a handful of emails to see how we can improve upon what you're currently doing?
Yep.
So I love this approach because it falls right into a very effective sales approach.
Yep. That's totally true. And you know, that's we've gone to agencies and said, hey, you know, if you'd like some third party validation, we are here for you. One woman said that the owner's son had done the website. So can you imagine going to the owner and saying, we have a problem here? Or mm-hmm. let's say the owner recognizes it and doesn't know how to talk to the son about it.
Yeah,
you have a way out. We can give you a way out.
Mm-hmm. But by the way, classic, right? Some relative or the neighbor's kid or, you know, or my in-law's nephew, whatever. There's a lot of those websites and other, you know, components of a business out there. And so it's nice to have a tool to be able to go back and say, you know, little Johnny, I got to get serious about my business. And so here's what we're going to be doing. And if you want to continue to be a part of it, at least now we have a guide,
which brings us
back to that, that point you made earlier about the audience being the superhero and, yep. and you as the business being their guide. So I'm curious, how do we help, some of the businesses out there become superheroes by allowing you to be their guide? Where can we learn more about the story quotient scorecard and the services that you're providing?
That's outstanding. So first place to go is our website, which is the word communicate, the number four, impact.com. So go to communicateforimpact.com. You have a couple of choices. Scroll down to the near to the bottom, and you will come across a free ebook called Business Storytelling from A to Z. It's a 26-page ebook that distills everything we know into the alphabet. So that's the first thing to do. The second thing to do is at the top of the page on the nav bar on the right, click on services and you will see story quotient. Go to the story quotient page and tell us if you want to get a score on your site. And not only that, you'll not only get a score on your site, we'll give you the score for a competitor. Give us the URL of a competitor and we'll give you that score as well.
Oh, I love that. And that it's talking about, you know, stirring up some emotion that certainly can do it one way or another. Who knows? Well, indeed. That's brilliant. So we'll be sure, of course, to have the link to communicate for the number four impact.com in the show notes, as well as a direct link to the page where you can learn more about story quotient. Awesome. Douglas Hatcher, thank you so very much. This has been a fun conversation.
David, thank you. Really, really enjoyed it.
Indeed. Folks, you've been listening to More Perfect Marketing. And if you didn't know where the title came from, thanks to Douglas for pointing out that it's inspired by the U.S. Constitution. In any event, I hope that you enjoyed the conversation today. And if you know somebody else who could benefit from listening, please share it with them. Until next time, my name's David Baer. Take care.
You have been listening to More Perfect Marketing. Now you can put what you've learned here into practice when you join the free listener community at mpmcommunity.com. That's mpmcommunity.com. When you join today, you'll receive David's collection of 26 smart marketing cheat sheets to help you master your marketing, plus additional business building training. So don't delay. Join us today at mpmcommunity.com. We can't wait to welcome you.